Welcome to Now You Know. I'm Catherine Sussman. Today, I am speaking with Camille Labchuk, animal rights lawyer and executive director of Animal Justice, on the topic of fur and feathers used in Canada Goose products. Camille, really great to speak with you today on the extremely heated topic of the Canada Goose Company and its use of animal products in its clothing.
Oh, it's so good to be here, Catherine. This is one of my favorite topics.
I think most people now here in Canada and many others around the world are aware of PETA's very passionate and targeted campaign against the company. I know myself, I'm just so aware now as I walk down the street, these coats seem to be everywhere. And whenever somebody passes me, I have PETA's images of coyotes trapped and geese being abused and suffering in my head. So it seems very ironic that there is such a targeted campaign, and yet the company does seem to be so prolific.
It's unfortunate, actually. And I first started noticing those jackets about 10 years ago, and like you, was immediately saddened to see them on the marketplace. And I thought, well, it's a small Canadian company. That's too bad. But hopefully the word will get out and people will stop wearing these coyote fur trim jackets. But unfortunately, in that past decade, the company has grown internationally. It now has stores all over the place, many storefronts in Canada, the United States, the UK. I believe it's opened its first stores now in China. So the reality is that we as advocates have a lot more to do to combat Canada Goose and expose the truth about where its fur comes from, because it just keeps growing.
It's really interesting because I think most Canadians would never even consider wearing a fur coat. And yet I think there's a disconnect between this coyote fur trim on hoods as being somehow real fur. Is it that you think the message isn't out there clearly enough that this is wearing fur, or do you think it's attributed to something else?
I think there's a couple of factors at play here. And first of all, I would say you're absolutely right that a lot of people don't want to wear fur anymore. And we never see, I shouldn't say never, but very rarely do I ever see anyone walking down the street with a full-length fur coat. That's just not okay anymore or socially acceptable. And I think what happened is that there's a feeling among people that fur is not okay anymore to wear. And so that when they see things that look like fur, people assume that it must be faux fur. Mm-hmm. They don't necessarily think of the trim around the jackets that they're purchasing as real fur, or they don't recognize what they see on the street as real fur. And this has become clear to me for a couple of reasons. One of those reasons is because of the great activist community in Toronto and activists everywhere who are approaching fur wearers on the street and giving them pamphlets, educating them about where that fur comes from. One of the most common responses that they get from those interactions is people saying, oh, I had no idea. I thought this was all faux fur. So I think, Catherine, that a lot of people just assume that everything now is faux fur. And then the other reason, and this sort of plays into the first reason, is people are not very good at distinguishing what is real fur and what isn't real fur. So I, for instance, because I'm kind of nerdily obsessed with fur and can't stand to see it all winter long, I could tell you from 200 meters away if something is faux fur or if it's real fur.
Right.
But your average person, I realize this, can't even tell that up close. So a lot of the times I fear that when compassionate people who don't want to wear fur are wearing faux fur, we're unwittingly promoting the fur industry. So I think there's a couple factors at play there, and those are a couple of them.
Thank you. And just, I was looking at the Canada Goose website in preparation for our chat today, and just to give listeners a bit of a rundown, on their website, they claim to ethically source all of their fur, feathers, and wool. And furthermore, they emphasize how they give back by helping polar bears and northern communities. The one other thing that I found kind of bizarre is that they describe themselves on the website as a kind of mama bird, with each coat meticulously cared for before, quote, leaving the nest. I just found that such an interesting and ironic image given their alleged abuse of, in particular, birds and coyotes.
Oh, it's appalling, actually. Canada Goose tries very hard to obscure the reality of what they do to animals. And it's funny, I've got the fur and down policy page on their website open right now as well. They use all kinds of flowery language. They say, we believe all animals are entitled to humane treatment and life and death, and deeply committed to the ethical sourcing and responsible use of all animal materials. And they say they don't condone any willful mistreatment or neglect or acts that maliciously cause animal suffering. So they try to make themselves out to be a compassionate, ethical company when the reality is far from that. it's interesting that they don't actually have any videos of animals being trapped or geese being killed for their down on their website, because I think that would go a long way to transparency. But what's interesting about their marketing claims, Catherine, is I believe that they're actually illegal. My organization, Animal Justice, filed a complaint with the Federal Competition Bureau in 2015 over their marketing claims because it's an offense to mislead consumers about the reality of a product you're selling. And we believe pretty strongly that their claims are completely false and completely misleading to people who are compassionate and want to make good choices. So if someone is on the fence and thinking, oh, I'm not really sure if I want to buy fur, well, I'll go to the website and see what Canada Goose says about it. And they see those statements where Canada Goose professes to care so much about the humane treatment of animals. I mean, you can easily see how someone would be misled into purchasing a product that they wouldn't otherwise have bought.
Absolutely. And in particular, when it comes to geese, they do state on the website that their down comes as a byproduct of the poultry industry and has not come from live plucked or force-fed birds. So I think a lot of people, if they read that, they think, oh, well, these birds are, you know, being killed for food purposes anyway. And that helps them justify.
Oh, totally. And I mean, the reality is this idea of a byproduct doesn't really exist. Anytime you're able to extract more value out of killing an animal by, say, selling that animal's skin as leather or selling that animal's feathers as down, that's just another way to increase the profitability of an industry that's already incredibly cruel.
So can you take us through, just sort of spell it out for listeners who may not have been on the PETA website and may not actually know what happens to a coyote when it's trapped and where these coyotes are being trapped? Is this just in Canada and the United States for Canada Goose? And as well, if you could just speak a bit about the conditions for geese and what they go through.
Yeah, sure. It's heartbreaking. Coyotes, of course, are killed to make the fur trim around Canada Goose jackets. And I believe that they source their coyotes from North America. I'm not sure if they've expanded to the extent that they're trying to do so elsewhere, but they kill a lot of coyotes, or to be more accurate, they purchase a lot of fur from killed coyotes in North America. So coyotes are killed in one of two ways in North America. There are leg hold traps, which are metal jaws that clamp around an animal's leg and hold the coyote there until the trapper can return and kill him or her. And they're also killed by snares. So I'll talk a bit about each of those and why they're so awful. So leg hold traps don't kill a coyote. They restrain the animal for a period of time until the trapper returns and does the dirty deed. The standards for what types of leg hold traps will be approved are shockingly low in Canada. So in field tests, they do these tests on new devices to decide if they're acceptable or not under international treaties to be approved. And the standard is appalling. If only a mere 80% of animals don't show signs of poor welfare, they will approve those traps. And what I mean by signs of poor welfare, it's actually pretty disturbing. So according to industry tests, animals shouldn't show signs of spinal cord injury, fractured bones, severed tendons or ligaments, organ damage, amputation, bleeding, all of those things. So that means that 1 in 5 coyotes in field tests can show those serious injuries, and they're still going to approve those traps. And these tests are done, by the way, by the fur industry itself. So leg hold traps themselves cause a lot of suffering. And then, Catherine, there's the timeline within which they must be checked. So you can imagine that trapping an animal in the woods or wherever they happen to be leaves them open to predation, leaves them open to thirst and hunger and exposure to the elements. Most of trapping is done in the winter when it's extremely cold in many places in this country. So they're in a pretty unfortunate situation for some period of time before trappers return to check the traps. In many places, there is no regulated timeline for checking traps. There's no standard or requirement. Other places, it might be once every 24 hours or once every 72 hours, perhaps. So it could be a very, very long time that these animals are left suffering.
Why is there no outside body regulating or setting standards?
The industry is very happy to set its own standards. There is an international treaty, the Agreement on International Humane Trapping Standards, that Canada signed with the European Union. And Russia is also a signature. And the purpose of this treaty, it's not to, I mean, they will say that it's to improve trapping standards, but the reality is I think it's a public relations exercise. It was passed at the time when the European Union wanted to ban all fur from leg hold traps. And the Canadian fur industry is like, whoa, 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 we want to keep selling our products to the lucrative European market. So they threatened to sue the European Union under international trade law. And I don't think that case would have worked today, but maybe in the 90s, the way the law was, it possibly could have. So the EU backed off and they created this treaty that was designed to do something or other. But the reality is that the fur industry itself and the Fur Council of Canada are the ones who are doing these tests and traps in Canada. They actually have a facility in Alberta where they take animals, they put them there, they put these traps out and they kill them and they monitor the results to see if they want to approve the traps.
And what about the conditions and the standards when it comes to geese? Where are these feathers coming from? Are they coming from overseas? What's going on?
So Canada Goose doesn't publish details of where all of its feathers come from, but we do know from at least one undercover investigation from PETA that one of their suppliers in Canada, so PETA had an eyewitness investigator who worked at a facility and traveled with a shipment of geese who were on their way to being slaughtered. And the down from these geese apparently did not go directly into Canada Goose jackets, but the facility and or the slaughterhouse processed Canada Goose down as well. And Catherine, what they saw was just horrific.
Is that on Canadian soil?
It was actually Canadian and U.S. soil. So the facility, the farm, was on Canadian soil. And then they trucked the birds for a lengthy, over 5-hour period in small wire cages in trucks on the highway across the border to the States where they were slaughtered. And what they saw was just horrific. They saw these birds crushed into small wire cages. They were on top of each other. They shrieked. They were flapping their wings in distress. One worker was seen repeatedly stepping on geese while they were reaching for other ones. They were just crammed into those crates with great force. And then they were trucked for a lengthy period to slaughter. The eyewitness saw them being unloaded from the crates at the slaughterhouse. They were grabbed by the neck. They were stunned. They were shackled upside down by the legs and killed right in front of the other geese who were still watching this occur.
And this is the video that you can actually see clips of on the PETA website, correct?
Absolutely. You can, if you just Google Canada Goose Down Supplier PETA Investigation, it'll be one of the top Google hits. And it's appalling, but I encourage people to go see this for themselves.
And is Canada Goose any different from the majority of other winter coat companies? Why are they specifically the targeted ones? Just because they're one of the largest?
I think that in Canada in particular, the fact that they're using our sort of country's national identity to market their products really rankles people in this country who feel that we're a compassionate country and we shouldn't be treating animals this way. And then just the fact that they're so pervasive. And also, frankly, the kind of type of person and attitude that you often sort of co-occurs with Canada Goose jackets, they're very, very expensive. Many of them are over $1,000. They're out of price for the average person. And I think that a lot of people have this perception of people who wear Canada Goose jackets that they're kind of clueless. They're a little bit rich. And they're spending their money on something that's not very ethical. So I think that there's also kind of a negativity that comes with like the culture around wearing Canada Goose jackets that really turns people off who are compassionate and don't want to see fur.
But are you basically saying, Camille, that all of these companies, we have a lot of work to do just in terms of getting better standards in place? Because any coat manufacturer, I know there are winter coat companies that use, I think, Helly Hansen and some of the higher end brands as well do have really warm alternatives. I think there is the perception that Canada Goose is the warmest. They market on their website, you know, all of the athletes and scientists and, you know, Arctic expeditioners that have worn their coats. But for the average person walking around, for example, our city here in Toronto, is that kind of warmth necessary? And is it even truthful that this is kind of the warmest brand?
Oh, first of all, it's absolutely not true that you need a Canada Goose jacket to stay warm. I have a wonderful Canadian jacket from Wuxley Movement, which is, frankly, saved my life in the Canadian winters. It's the warmest jacket I've ever had, and it's not filled with goose down. It is filled with something called Primaloft, which is a much better insulator. It's what people going to Arctic expeditions are now wearing. I think it was actually developed by NASA. Wanted a really high-tech, lightweight material. And the great thing about Primaloft is, unlike goose feathers, when they get wet, they freeze and you lose that insulation factor. But Primaloft is synthetic, so it doesn't really get wet and absorb water in the same way. But you're right, Canada Goose tries to market itself as like the absolute best choice. But the reality is that there are all kinds of other options out there, animal-friendly options. So I think what we really need to do is just start replacing down in the supply chain. That's a really, really easy switch. It's obviously down is something internal to a jacket. No one will even notice if it's replaced. So it's easy to make that change. With fur, I think that's a little bit trickier. We, as compassionate consumers, need to rise up and make clear to companies that they're not going to get our business if they do continue to put fur on jackets. And that's more of a challenge. I think, like you said, that most people don't want to wear fur and are not aware that they are wearing fur when they purchase it. And if they are aware, they aren't aware of the conditions under which those animals were raised, if they come from fur farms, or the conditions under which they were trapped or under which they were snared. So we have an education project ahead of us.
So Camille, how close are we to getting some changes in place here or a ban on some of these really horrible practices?
Well, we're starting to see movement against fur in many locations. And actually the States, the West Coast in particular, has been an inspiration. We've already seen many California cities passed total bans on fur in their jurisdiction, so on fur sale. I think West Hollywood was the first, Berkeley, San Francisco, and just recently Los Angeles passed a ban. This ban would cover the sale of fur from fur farms in those jurisdictions, as well as from animals who were trapped, who weren't trapped in that state. And I believe there's some U.S. constitutional issue that prevents them from totally banning fur from animals who were trapped legally in that state. But there's so little fur trapping now in California that I think that's a pretty comprehensive ban.
Amazing.
So that's really, it's amazing. It's really inspiring and encouraging. And a New York lawmaker has just introduced a similar ban in New York State. And so I don't know what the chances of success are for that one, but I think it's really inspiring to start looking at what's beginning to happen.
And what are the next steps for animal justice when it comes to this?
Well, we're still exploring ways to hold Canada Goose to account legally. As I said, I do very firmly believe that Canada Goose is engaged in misleading advertising. So that complaint I mentioned that we had filed against the company, unfortunately, the Competition Bureau, which is the regulator, they chose not to do anything. They responded to our complaint with a very brief letter and didn't really explain why they wouldn't do anything. We had forced them to do an investigation by using a statutory measure where if six people complain, they have to investigate. So they did investigate, decided not to do anything, aren't telling us why. So we have some pretty active access to information requests underway to try to find out more and see if there's a way that we can hold them to account legally. Unfortunately, the Competition Bureau is fighting us on those. So it's been almost 3 years now since I filed those complaints and there's an appeal process going on. So we'll keep everybody posted, but you know, I certainly want to expose more of the cruelty that happens in Canada. I think it's been very difficult for people to connect with trapping issues because it's not like a farm where at least those facilities are in our communities. We've seen undercover investigations now from Canadian factory farms. Trapping happens in the most remote areas in this country. There is no one else there to oversee the practices. Trappers are usually independent and might go out by themselves or maybe with one or two others. The wildlife officials who are supposed to police these things, you know, it's so spread out that they just can't access all those areas. So there's no footage really of what happens in Canada unless trappers post it themselves. Mm-hmm. They do that occasionally on YouTube, but I think we really need to have more light shed on this whole field.
And what should we be doing as just the average citizen other than just boycotting Canada Goose? Like, are there steps that you recommend people take to try to help this problem?
Yeah, I think educating others is really key and doing it in a way that helps teach them about the truth of what animals endure in the fur trade and the down trade. Living by example is always a good thing, just being a positive example. So showing off your amazing, whether it's a Wuxley jacket or maybe a Noise jacket. Aritzia has great parkas. Le Chateau does. Arc'teryx. Mountain Equipment Co-op. It's a great brand called Lole, which has animal-free jackets. Frank and Oak. There's all kinds of Canadian brands. So I would encourage people to wear those brands with pride.
Even if you want a designer brand, Sporting Life has many, you know, high-end alternatives to that have no animal product in their winter coats.
Totally. You can look very, very stylish and avoid all of these horrible cruelty-free jackets. I also personally have made the choice not to wear faux fur. I understand if people do want to wear faux fur and explain to others that it's not real. But I think for me, the danger I was seeing is that people would see that faux fur, they wouldn't be able to tell if it was real or not. And it would create and contribute to this perception that fur is somehow stylish and fashionable, whether it's faux or not. And the confusion that we know people feel when they see this was a problem for me. So I avoid doing that too.
I do the same. If somebody has one of these coats and then they hear this, what do you recommend they do with their coat? I think we need somebody to come up with some sort of like positive project for all of these Canada Goose coats floating around it.
Oh, you're so right. Well, there's actually a solution to this. So wildlife rescues that take in orphaned baby animals, they will accept fur trim and fur jackets to use those in rehabilitation of baby animals. So it's really comforting for, say, a little baby coyote who's lost his mom to a trap. It's really comforting for them to be able to have access to something that feels kind of like mom. So I believe that if you visit, for those listening in Toronto, I think Animal Rights Toronto, their website has a way to connect people with fur, with rescues who will take that fur.
Amazing. Camille, thank you so much for talking to me today. And thank you for all that you do on behalf of animals. You're definitely a local and in addition, a national hero for many of us. So thanks very much.
Well, it's really kind of you to say, and I'm so delighted to join you and talk about this and hopefully educate more people.